Hello, welcome to The Honest Wargamer. However, today has been hijacked by one of the most glorious men in my life and in the Warhammer community, Mr. Darren I Write List Watson. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Please. I'm very, very well. Thank you very much. And yourself? I know we've already had this conversation, but it's nice to say live.
Could we please get an introduction to who you're with?
This is Evie, my little Romanian rescue, bless her. So she craves attention. So she might be whinging throughout this entire show if I don't give her any attention.
Oh, she is a sweetheart.
She is. Sweetheart. Wait,
if you need
that.
Anyone to babysit her for 3 days to 8 years, let me know. Happy to
Freddy's about somewhere, but all he does is sleep.
Oh, Darren, could the dog have possibly knocked your camera off?
Oh, he has. Fucking Evie, excuse me. Oh, shit.
That's Hang a on. Good start to the show. Don't let it fluster you. You're doing great.
Are you still there?
I'm still here. You sort your camera out, and I'll just say hello to the Twitch chat. You're back. I can see you.
I'm back.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
It's not the technology now. It's the... On that note, I've got broadband. I've put an ether cable to my router, and now it's 10 times faster. So hopefully this won't mess up as much.
We're doing really well. You sound nice because you're near the microphone. We can see you.
Excellent. Do you want to see Malbec, but without a Lego wheel?
Please. Yeah. Malbec, if you guys...
Recently it came off. 2 seconds.
If you guys don't remember, Malbec is Darren's tortoise, who unfortunately had a cracked shell and a poorly leg, and he got given a Lego wheel to be safe. Hello, Lex. Thanks for subscribing. It's a real difference. There he is. There's Malbec.
He's still got these little bits because they're super glued on, and we're hoping they'll fall off. But look, he's without it worked. It's
Go without... on, Malbec.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah, so I'm really pleased with that because the vets gave us... Hang on. I'll chat to you in a sec. The vets gave us an option of having his leg chopped off because it would be easier on us. And we said, no, we'll spend the £800 and go through all the various operations. And the gamble worked. He's managed to keep his leg. So we're very, very pleased. So, yeah, we've got a lot to be happy for here in the Watson and Rook Yard residence.
Oh, I'm super happy about that. And have you been well yourself? We haven't spoken to you in a while. How's things been going?
So if you want to hear some positive COVID stories, we've been thriving. Work-wise, I told you before, didn't I? I'm still working from home, and it's probably going to become a permanent thing because I've done so well. Alex's father has recently retired and given her 12 grand, and she's got that in investments. You know, she's only 28, but she's investing 12 grand, so she's done really well, right?
Well done.
I've got some money in the bank for the first time in my adult life because I've not spent it on toys and events. So just a lot of, that's a lot of good things here. I mean, we're all bored as fuck, aren't we? But there's a lot to be grateful for. Malbec's still got his leg, you know. I'm over the moon about that. So, yeah, just really good. Where I'm not going to events, you probably know, don't you? I've been trying to write a halfling.
I do know. This is my favorite thing. I would like you all to know that this is maybe my favorite thing of 2021 so far. I mean, obviously the destruction of the financial market was also one of my favorites, but that's a side note. I'm pretty certain Darren's got diamond hands because he is a stock investor as well, but we'll talk about that later. You have been writing from scratch, and I'm going to have to ask you loads of questions about this, I'm sorry. And we are going to do a review on The Honest Wargamer. We're going to do some TTS battles with it when it's been playtested. So we're going to do the same thing that we would do to a Games Workshop battle tome, is a battle tome from start to finish. Tell me what it is initially.
Well, I'll tell you why I did it. So I've got no events to go to, have I? So there are things that keep me up at night normally, which are, you know, what's good in the meta? What army are going to take? What army lists do I think I'm going to be fighting? What scenarios do I think I'll be in? I'm always writing maps, and I've not had any of that for a year. So there's been like a hole in my heart and my head. And it's been filled by this desire to write a battle tome. I'm the older I get, so I'm 40 this year. I know I look like I wash with Dove, but I'm 40 this year, and I'm becoming more and more obsessed with having an opinion based from a position of strength. Mm-hmm. You know, opinions, there's so many opinions that fly around, aren't there? But so many are based on fuck all, you know, people's best guess. And one of the things I'm very passionate about is Age of Sigmar and the rules and, you know, the reason for rules, etc. Mm-hmm. So I ask myself that question, how hard is it to write a good set of rules? So that's why I decided to do it. And it's, I realized that that's what I've replaced my hobby and my list writing and my, you know, my mental space with this desire to do this. And it's become much, much bigger than I appreciated. It's quite a monumental task. It really is.
Well, and the subject of this battle tome that you've decided to write is, announcing it yet? Is it not? Is it? Are we waiting?
Oh, no, I thought to myself, wouldn't it be cool if
reveal video?
I've got a couple of mates that have got halfling armies, but they can't use them in Age of Sigmar. And then I saw a wonderful conversion on Twitter. There's a little chap with a lance on a massive cockerel, a war cockerel, right? And I was really inspired by that. I forget who it was, but I'm desperate to get in touch with the chap if anyone knows him. But I thought, wouldn't it be fucking cool if that we could actually use that model rather than it just being slotted into a Cities of Sigmar list? And then Mark, old Mark, what's his bollocks?
Beer Mouse?
Wildman, yeah. Mark Wildman, bless him. He's doing an entire halfling army, isn't it? And it's solid. So I'd really like to see that. So I was desperate to actually see that. And I thought, well, fuck it, I'll just do it myself. And hopefully I'll gain some insight into the whole process, you know, and then I will be in a better position to critique or defend in the future. And I've learned quite a bit already, I think.
Okay.
I've learned that I am not a writer. the main thing that I'm really struggling with is all those little narrative blurbs. But what I think is super interesting, if I can just wank on about it for a little bit, is how important they are. When I first started, I was just writing war scrolls and rules for units, you know, and I did not care about them. I looked at these little scrolls that I'd made on War Scroll Maker, and I did not care about them. So that the narrative, but coming from a really competitive gaming background, it really drills home to me just how important the narrative is for you to be able to create an emotional attachment to your little toy soldiers, right? And mm-hmm. even from someone that just cares about going to an event and going 5-0 as many times as possible, that's still super important. So that was quite a revelation for me, to the point where I'm trying. So I'm not the most narrative of people. I don't have any English degrees. I'm not particularly intelligent, so I'm trying to get as many people as possible to sort of help me out with that narrative part. And people have been so generous with their time, and they really are sort of helping me.
Well, so I would say, number one, you are smart, so don't put yourself down. Number two, I would say, as we all know, this is The Honest Wargamer is, I don't know if you heard the news, but we're a narrative channel now. We actually only do narrative. I'm not sure if you caught the memo. We only do story. It's just consequential that we happen to also be good at gaming. It just seems for some reason we're able to do both and not only one, which is embarrassing if you can only do the one. I'll never not get tired of that. I would agree with you. Some of the stuff that we've covered over the past year of the Stream Street, it's not quite a year, but it will be March 20th. Think put your calendars in for our birthday party is
an achievement as well. That's fucking fantastic. Well
thanks,
done,
bud. Is that, of course, the emotional investment that you get in your army and units is also super super important. Same as lists. Same as the competitive stuff is always is relevant. But the game itself is narrative, right? And that's where sometimes, and I know Vince has done a show on it, and it's been something we've talked about a lot, that dissonance that you get between well-written rules and units that have a blurb, like, this unit will destroy the earth, slayer of 1,000 kings, 2 attacks, hit on 4s, no rend, damage two, and you're like, okay, that's not, that isn't that.
I agree, but have you ever tried writing those bits of blurb?
Fuck no, me. I haven't.
Yeah, well, I hadn't either, and you want to get it right, and it's hard. That's the thing I'm struggling with the most. The rules are done, the battalions are done, the points are done. Like, it's ready to be playtested. But right. when you're presenting it to people as well, you send them, like, what you've got, and it's just rules. And I don't, and I think that really affects how, if it was beautifully presented, like in a battle tome, with all those little bits of blurb, I think people would, you know, care about it more. And so it is, it's super interesting. And it's difficult to get that right balance between a nice bit of blurb and what's actually going on. It is, well, for me it is. I mean, I'm no writer, like I say. So, but I can see, so that, it's given me that little bit of insight. Which I really appreciate. And I do feel better armed to make critique and to defend as well, you know, on balance.
But I think they don't have to be, Dave Fraser's making a point in the chat, which I kind of agree with. I don't think that they have to be like, they're like, it like murderous and savage, unable to kill 1,000 men. You know, like it could just be like, look, like these beasts, they like kinky boots and sometimes they'll pinch off a person's head. And you're like, I'm really into that narrative. Like, that's great. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't always have to be the best thing in the world. I'd prefer if the idea, maybe it's harder to, like you're saying, it's harder to be more creative. So the easy fallback is always to describe something as terrifying and dangerous. Do you know what I mean?
Like, all the people that are writing those blurbs aren't particularly really good at the game. So it's difficult to, like, it's difficult to imagine it all the way back when they're first creating it. From, I mean, I don't know how their process is. Do the rules come first? Does the narrative come first, etc.? And that would make a real sort of difference to that. But it's a difficult balance to strike. But I do see your point. You know, it is frustrating when you see something's awesome and it just turns out to be shite.
It's my fair. If anything, it's better. I prefer that. Like, I'm 2020 Rob is 2021 Rob. Sorry, is definitely more on the side of let's have a great time, and I prefer that they be more disconnected than they are connected. I think that makes it more entertaining. You know, like Gotrek's a good content. Example. It's great content. It's great fun as well. I'm like, oh my god, like is that the Khorne Dragon, destroyer of 1,000 worlds? They're like, yeah. I'm like, But is that a frog on a chair? It's like, yes. I'm like, oh, shit. Oh, baby.
Oh, was it you saying the other day, wouldn't it be funny if you put those two next to each other? I did. You and Nathan were talking about it, weren't you? And like you explained to a newbie that dragon is terrified of that frog.
They'd be like, what? So with competitive narrative channel with narrative gaming like in the fray, and obviously we can't play many games, big shout out to the Kiwis and of course the Aussies who are playing games. I think a couple of guys, Zaidi guy and all the Israelis, are able to play a few games recently as well, and there might be some other people out there in the world.
Wonderful news,
of course. But like, there's not loads of gaming. Obviously, me and Owen keeping track of any competitive stuff that's happening. TTS is kicking off as well. How have you like, especially for someone like you? I know that you're very like emotionally and personally invested in the competitive gaming scene. You keep track a lot. You pay attention. Like, have you just been like, cool? I can't. There doesn't seem to be very much of it. I don't know what to do. Can't keep track. Don't feel my fingers on the pulse. Or have you been able to keep up? Do you think?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Is my point. I wonder.
I think it ties in a little bit with the fact that I'm getting a bit older as well. So I'm 40 this year, and I very much feel that drive to be as good as I can ebbing away. Okay. You know, which is interesting. You know, which might explain why I'm putting so much effort into a bloody battle tome that no one's going to use.
Oh, I'll use it.
I can feel myself. I'm still very passionate about the competitive scene, and I would still love to see it drive forward. But I think perhaps my involvement with it will start to move away from, you know, trying my hardest at events and move more into how else I can support it for future generations, right? Because I'm not always going to be, I can feel your mental acuity goes down, doesn't it, as you get older. And I know that I feel not as good at the game as I was 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 10 years ago. I can feel that. I used to be able to see it all, right? So I could walk up to a table and I'd know what was going to be happening in 3 or 4 turns time. And that is, I know from, you know, games that I've had, that that's now 2 turns, and it, you know, and it will become 1 turn in the future, and I will naturally get worse at the game. And that just comes with age, but also a lack of, you know, my testosterone's down, all that normal bollocks that happens when you get 40. So
I actually think that that is, so there's a really, really, like, again, we will get to the lists, I promise. Someone who's just tuned in is like, oh, I fancy listening to some lists. So there's a really, really good book about age, actually, if you guys want to go and read it. I can't remember what it's called, which is hilarious. but that's not because I'm old. That's because I can't remember shit. And most importantly, the start of the book, prefix, it was about a man, and if you guys can go and find it, it starts out, I'll try and be quick with this. Starts out with a guy talking about his dad, who was like 65, and he was in like a nursing home. Yeah, like, and he really wouldn't get up much. He was like sat in a chair. He was pretty despondent and basically checked out. So he goes to visit him that day. Then he goes home and he watches the curator of the of a famous German art like museum. I can't remember what it's called. I think it begins with a G, but it's not. Maybe it's the Guggenheim. Maybe
it'll do.
Yeah, something like that. Whatever. But the point is, and this guy is like being interviewed on TV, and he's still like razor wit, like super sharp, and he's like 94 or something. Yeah. And so this guy like is like, how am I in a position where I'm seeing a 30-year age gap between these two people, and I am like, you know, and there's this quite stark difference, right? And that's because really, like, and this is obviously, this isn't a health advice channel, of course, but really, like, the concept of slowing down really only applies, and of course it's real, like your bones become more brittle and some other stuff, but like, you know, if you keep yourself active and you keep yourself like awake and alive, like Dave Fraser says, use it or lose it, like if you do crossword puzzles and play games, I think that's actually one of the really exciting things about Warhammer, as some of us might get older, is your mind is going to be kept so active and so alive, you're like constantly working out puzzles and learning new skills and practicing. I actually think that Warhammer is a great, great thing for keeping yourself alive. So number one, I think you're being self-depreciating, but number two, I would say that actually you'll be surprised, I think, that how relevant you'll be able to continue to be over the next 20 years. Like, and make it 40. Do you know what? I'll pick 40. Like because you can. Like, there are great examples of people who do that. You just have to use it or lose it, basically.
I agree. To say that, you say self-depreciating, I think one of the really useful skills in Age of Sigmar and wargaming that I have, one of my strengths, is that I know and understand myself. So I think it's okay that I'm not as good as I used to be. Like, I'm comfortable with that. I've got more experience, and I think that balances it out, but it'll come to a point where that balance is skewed the other way, and I'm okay with that, and it's okay to be okay with that. I don't think it's a bad thing, but one of my great strengths is I understand that. I know my flaws, and I can tailor my lists and my play style and my attitude around it, and I think that's super important if you want to be successful at anything, let alone gaming, right?
Yeah, it's true. I'm just conscious of how much sometimes you put yourself down. Like, and you shouldn't, because you're wonderful. Yeah, so the idea that you're getting slower, I think, is something you're putting on yourself. And I agree with everyone in the chat. I'll be playing Warhammer well into my cyborg days, says Nick. I agree with that. Scott B says, keeping stimulated definitely helps. Before, my granddad had bed memory problems before he went into a home, but after, it got way worse. That being in one room, not doing anything, really affects your memory motivation. Hell, I've kind of noticed it during lockdown, with my life being mostly in one place, it can be hard to remember what day things happen on, etc. Super agree with that. But I'm also really in for, as you guys know, number one, let's look at some of the oldest people in Warhammer. AD Mac is 432 years old. Yeah, right? But he'll still kick your ass at Warhammer all day long, right?
Yeah, he will, and he'll smile the whole time he's doing it. he's my hero, AD Mac. Have I told you my AD Mac story?
Please do.
So I love him for a start. So when I first started out going to tournaments, I went to my very first competitive, you know, adult tournament. I think I was 16. And my very first game was against this tall, gangly chap, Dave something or other. Mm. And he was using a Skaven army and I was using an Empire army. And he'd moved forward his big, horrible Skaven unit that had the Grey Seer on Bell in it, you know, the one that was immune to psychology in those days or some such. And my Hellblaster went apeshit and fucking smashed this unit right off the board and it could no longer move. And he had a right cop and he kept accusing me of cheating. And basically he was a big dick in the Warhammer world. And like this 16-year-old nothing had basically smashed him. But throughout the entire game, I kept quiet. And then right at the end, I went, I have put my unit here 12 inches and showed him. I watched what you did. You put your unit on the board 10 inches. Why did you not know that we were 26 inches apart? Why did you move forward your full movement? Why did you let me get in range? You've made a mistake, not me. I got lucky, fair enough, but stop pissing and moaning. Anyway, he went off in a huff. And then AD was playing some other chap next to me with this beautiful Empire Cavalry Army. And at the time, all the cavalry armies were Bretonian, but he'd done it in an Empire. And it was just glorious. And he went, obviously someone I knew of, being, he was fucking the boy in the day, wasn't he? Right. He used to win a lot of stuff. So someone I very much looked up to. And he took me to one side and he said, I'm really pleased you stood up for yourself. He's been a right dick. Never lose that. He said something. Always be a force at the table. And then he fucked off into the mist, you know, in my... but that is something that has stayed with me. You know, At the table, I make sure that I'm involved in all the conversations about what happens. I don't let any fucker walk over me. And that has served me so well. And I got that confidence from AD all that time ago. So thank you. That's why he's one of my Warhammer heroes. Anyway,
he is a Warhammer hero. It's all right. We all love AD Mac. Big love. Yeah, people that don't like AD Mac, people who are dicks. Yeah. And if AD Mac like you, don't like you, you're probably a dick. I'm just going to put that out there.
But that was 16, so that would be a good... Fucking hell, how long is that? 24 years ago. 23 years ago. Yeah, a long time.
And he was 103 then. anyway, just looking forward to these jokes and fucking Adam Mumford's making me about me in 20 years, prick. Right, so so how have you been able to keep up, or do you think that there's no keeping up, or what are you saying? How are things like looking at Age of Sigmar at the minute? How do you think the game is at the minute? Got any thoughts on that?
Well, that's a lot of questions in one sentence. I think I've kept up with it reasonably well. So I do pay a lot of attention to TTS and the lack of data thereof. Owen and you have done a wonderful job, you know, keeping that alive. And there are other events to fucking crack on with. So although I'm not playing, I don't want to say it's the scene's dead when it isn't. Just because I'm not involved with it doesn't mean that it, you know, isn't thriving. And it is thriving. There's loads of high-end quality games that are being played. TTS is different to real life. Once you get used to it, you've got all those handy measuring things and it reminds you of a lot of stuff. So I think when people wean themselves off of TTS and go back to real events, one of the things they're going to have to be super conscious of is not being as complacent as they were before. But that isn't something that people aren't capable of, you know, so that transition. I think the wargaming war space has been changed forever, hasn't it? We can play online, you know. I still hope that there are TTS tournaments when the world gets back to normal.
I think there definitely will be. I also think that we won't have to wait quite as much. Really good for people like me in that analyst sort of position in the future, because we won't have to wait quite as long. Like, there are already people racking up tons of Sinesh and Daughters of Cain games without needing to own the models, for example. So it's great. It's great because it gives you some really good relevant information. And especially going forward as we move into like a lot of team events in the future, I think that's also really relevant as well, because people can start to be like, like they can start theorying a lot of stuff, and I think that that's a big, big positive. Because I don't think it affects Games Workshop sales at all. I think what it does is it just makes people buy better. So it's not like
people are still going to spend their money, aren't they?
Yeah, so they'll just spend them more effectively, which I think is really positive for the community. That's a really important point, and also reduces feel bads. Also great as well. You buy this new unit and you're like, oh man, these are pretty, you know, and then you're like, I love these, and then you're like, oh, they're shit, but everyone online said they're good.
Yeah, I'll give an example of that very thing. So we're in a, well, I say we're, Dan Bradshaw and Luke Morton and Simon Hall are in a team in one of the
Butcher's event. Tribe event.
Yeah, that's the trap. And we came up against Laurie, Benjamin Sava and Owen, and I'm there as a sort of the sort of coach, in so much as sort of giving advice, and you know, it's just nice to be involved. It was nice to be asked.
Yeah,
but I'm very much part of the team, and we got smashed 3-0, and it was because they were so prepared. You know, after when we were talked after it, I discussed it with Laurie and Benjamin and Owen, and they were able to, you know, with all that information, they could play and practice games on TTS, not whole games, but just like different deployments, etc. In Benjamin's matchup, he had his deployment nailed in a matchup that on paper might have looked to be, you know, against him. Mm-hmm. And they were able to do that, over technology. So I think the landscape of team events will be changed for the better. We're going to see more and more exceptional plays be developed from people because they've got more access to each other. And it's not about just going to events and making it up on the spot anymore.
Which I think is great. I think that's big positives. I think prep has always been that thing that maybe players have needed to do for events. I know some of us out there are like, I can't be asked to prep. I get it. Don't read the pack. I get it. Just turn up, roll dice. That's great. Like that's that fun mid-table attitude, which I completely respect. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm all about it. Like, live your life.
And that made the difference, you know. The result is a fair one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's the truth, you know. Fair play to them, well done. So, but I'm excited to see how that develops in the future, because obviously I love preparation. So my traditional prep wasn't sufficient. So I need to develop, and I'm excited to sort of learn those skills. And we'll see better Warhammer and better Age of Sigmar because of it.
Or we'll see more crazy Warhammer, like intern Matt is saying in the chat. TTS has sold Games Workshop's more cockatrices in the last 12 months than they've managed in the last 5 years.
I think that's AOL. We've got Adam to...
Yeah, but that's also TTS. Like, Adam put that on there, then they sold him. All right. So, talk to me. You've written some lists up for us, right?
Yes, let's get on with the show. Lovely. I can't see your beautiful face on my telly, so you're gonna have to tell me which one we're discussing.
No problem. First one I've got four lists to show everyone. I've named them for you, sorry. Quad Kippers, Fat Nurgle, Fatty Loka, and Fatty Idolaters.
There's a theme.
Is what I've called them. They're all available on the Lost War Gaming website. I'm going to show them on the screen now. And if you are listening to the podcast, thanks for listening. Stay hydrated. Thanks to everyone on Patreon. You guys literally support me so I can do this. Free and fair media is what you get from the Honest Wargamer by subscribing. So everything we do is free, but you guys all know this already. But if you want to support me on Patreon, I'd fucking love you because it's looking tight on rent recently. it's funny until it's not. right, so...
I'm just getting the list up on my phone so I can hopefully not make too many mistakes. I'm not
okay. All right. Let me just hold on. So you guys should be able to. Perfect. I've got it for you, lads. So here we go. First list. I'm gonna bring it over for you guys to see. Is called Fatty. Oh no. Quad Kippers. Hmm. Quad Kippers. So do you want to talk to me about this?
I'll talk, so it's all sort of Sanesh themed. Oh, hang on, Malbec has just turned himself over. 2 seconds. Naughty Malbec. He's on his back. Right, there you go. Sorry, had to save my tortoise. That isn't a euphemism. so I read, so we were supposed to do this show a week ago, weren't we? And I messaged you to say, Rob, I ain't got anything. I'm not inspired by the Sanesh tone. But I was working from Potato Can Pictures, and it's difficult to sort of visualize everything. And within that time, I got to see a bit of content elsewhere. And the resounding sort of feedback is that, you know, the Bliss Barb Archer Cavalry are the shit, and they are. They're fantastic. There's not a great deal elsewhere in the tome. So these lists, I didn't want to just spam the most efficient unit in the tome. So I've got no Bliss Barb Archer Cav in there anywhere. Not because I don't think they're any good. I think they're exceptional. But exceptional may be a bit strong. Relatively in the book, they're very good. The Archer Cavalry, not the ones.
Okay,
on
so foot. in context of the book, maybe not the whole game.
No, not at all. And I also couldn't get over. It's taken me a little while to get over the cost of Bliss Barb archers on foot, which is to the Bliss Barb cavalry that are 180. I can't. Some things just don't compute, and that does not. It very much looks like it was a case of just like, Gerald, what's the next unit? Bliss Barb archers. 160. Like, just not. I can't fathom it. If you compare them to the cavalry, they're 20 points cheaper. Well, I won't wank on about how terrible I think that is, because this show shouldn't be negative. But that I couldn't get over for a long time. So I wasn't excited about the Slanish book. And that was probably a wrong attitude to have, actually. I might have been in lockdown and a bit more grumpy than I needed to be. But I spent too long thinking about that. So I took that week to try and prepare myself. And I'm desperate to talk about some interesting things. So these are four lists that are... There's one Slanish one, and then there are three lists where I think Fatty Bum Bum fits very well, basically, because I like Glutos, the fat bastard, but I like him in other lists rather than Slanesh. But we'll get onto that. So that's just a little prerequisite to these lists. So we'll start with Quad Keeper. Yes, I do like this one.
Can I just thank Stephen AOS for subscribing, by the way? Just real quick, we'll resubscribing. Just thought I'd put that out there because it just happened. Also to T-Man Cash. Big love to you and Halalex. I saw you all subscribing, so giant love for that. Sorry, just get that out of the way. So talk to us about this Keepers of Secrets list that we're seeing here.
I was trying to resubscribe to you then because I just realised I can.
It's okay, you don't have to.
Can't do two things at once, so now I've lost it.
It's okay, carry on with this.
There we go. Yeah, no, this is more important, Watson. So this... So we've got, I love memes, right? And I love the thought of quad keepers, kippers. They're very good, aren't they? I think Keepers of Secrets are okay. Obviously, they're not potentially as powerful as they were when they first come out, when they were batshit crazy, but that is good for the game. One thing about the Slanesh tome that's come out is that we all piss and moan about power creep, but then when a tome comes out that isn't more powerful than every other tome, we all lose our shit. So I like the Slanesh tome overall. It's not a good powerful fucking tome, but not every tome has to be.
I think my most recent stab at trying to review books is reviewing it like power level is an interesting conversation, like where is it positioned power wise and and obviously I did a quick TLDR of the Monday show, which is 3 hours long with me and Nathan, is that yes, a book doesn't have to be powerful, absolutely, but like the argument and the Sons of Behemoth is a very similar conversation as well. I would want the book to be interesting. Like the concept of it's not powerful, but it's fun. And I'm like, okay, show me the fun things that you do in this book. And you're like, none. Like the Slanesh book generally feels like there's very little fun to be engineered from you as a player. And Darren, I know you get this conversation a lot. The interactions are limited. Like, and same with Sons of Behemoth. Like, it's a very, very singular play style that that doesn't allow for diversity really in of itself, and also they can't overlap with each other. So like being pitched at not powerful is fine, but when it's also like clunky and not ill considered, but like it just doesn't mesh well, like is also not a positive either. Like, and that's and sometimes people won't really see that for the weeds, because you'll be like, oh, everything's over point. I'm like, cool, you can reduce the points on, you probably reduce the points on Sinesh stuff by 40% across the board, and you would end up with like a fairly competitive book. Yeah, that's fine. But then you would still just be pushing the same crap around and not really doing anything interesting. I don't think you would do anything interesting. Am I making sense? I don't think Croak on a Balewind is interesting either. I want everyone to know that. No. Like,
no, those are absolutely, they're fair comments. That's a polite way of putting it, isn't it?
That's trying harder. Like, but it. Anyway, there's some cool stuff in there. So carry on. What were you saying?
So I've tried to. Well, these are the things about the tome that excited me the most. I think one of the problems of the Slaanesh tome is there's a lot of rehashed rules and mechanics, and they're just slotted in different ways. But then there isn't a lot, and I've got this experience from writing the Halfling tome. There's not a lot of design space left in Age of Sigmar. A lot of everything and interactions have already been explored. So perhaps we're suffering from just seeing the same shit but repackaged. Over and over. So that is a worry for future tomes. I appreciate everything you said there, absolutely. But if you'd seen it for the first time, then perhaps it would have been more interesting, right? But it's just a lot of rehash.
Yeah, but the fun stuff, like I always talk about that, the Wrathmonger and also the Starseer rerolls as two fun rules, right?
That weren't overpowered, that were fucking cool, and you could counter. You could do something about.
Exactly. I feel that there is space there. I think that there is a lot of creativity still to be added to the game. I do think that. But yeah, anyway, like that's a different conversation.
Well, I do as well. I mean, I've tried to, but I've actually tried to do it, and I know it's, well, for me, it was certainly hard. It's difficult. It is a difficult challenge. We could. That's another topic, and
we'll do that. We'll do a show on that. It'll be fun.
Yeah, cool. So let's go through this list anyway then. So I've gone for the Pretender's Host, and from memory, that's the one where the general can have two command traits as opposed to one, and units over 10 can reroll ones to hit. And then there's some shenanigans about the battalions, but I...
We ignore that.
What... Oh, hang on. No, I might have fucked up already. Isn't the Pretenders, you can have one in the Supreme Cyberites, or can you have more than one in the Supreme Cyberites? Is that the Pretenders or is that the Invaders?
Let me get my notes up for you so I can reference them specifically.
I might have just already, that's what I love about this show. I fuck up so often, don't I? Let me just double check the actual tome itself.
Okay, so what are we doing? Pretenders?
Pretenders, yeah.
The general gets two command traits. Units with 10 or more models get to reroll hit rolls of one for melee weapons while the general is on the board. And then in Supreme Cyberites, the Supreme Cyberites battalion must contain 4 to 6 instead of 3 to 6 if it's in Pretenders.
Right, that's fine. Okay, emergency over. I thought it was just one. So, yeah, so that's what we've got. So we've got, where's my bloody list now? It's gone. So we've got four Keepers of Secrets in a Pretender's Doobry for a start, which I love. You've got the General who has got they've all got the Sinestrous Hand because you want to be, they're 14 wounds and they've got a 4-up save. And the Sinestrous Hand does, if you kill something in a unit, you get D3 wounds back, which you really need. And especially with how we all know about how the depravity works, so I'm not going to spend time explaining that. We all know how the chain, you know, you've discussed how Locus works now, don't you? Which I actually really like, the Locus change. He's got the Silver Sash, which is an extra attack, and the Strength of Godhood, and the trait Hunter of God Beasts. So we're getting +1 damage on all our weapons for against monsters, and there are more and more monsters in the game, which I love. And then this, I don't really completely understand the Strength of Godhood. It's some convoluted way of saying eventually you get +1 wound on something in the fourth battle step of some rank or whatever. It's extra damage, okay? Yeah. That's how I understand it. At some point, you get an extra thing dies. Fucking great. And that's a good point, actually, to start off with. They are like paper, but one way you can deal with dying quickly is if you kill shit, it can't kill you back. Mm-hmm. So you've got a couple of ways of trying to mitigate damage. One is to get Geminids in there and have minus one to hit with Fat Bloke and all that stuff. But I don't like that route for Slaanesh because it's covering a weakness rather than playing to a strength. And one of my mantras in life is to, you know, attack the day and, you know, play to your strengths and not try to cover your weaknesses, because that's the route, in my opinion, to a slow death. Mm-hmm. So anything that I value, anything in a Slaanesh army, anything that increases damage. And the reason that we're pretenders is because of this little combo. If I can deal with that first of all. When I, what was the event where I got fucked by a dice? Bobo.
Bobo.
So I learned in that I was God Beasts at the time. Not God Beasts. What they called God Seekers. God Seekers. They get the plus one to charge, and that's what I thought was. And I really do value that. It is fantastic. But I ran into, with my Keepers of Secrets, two monsters, a plague chap on a sensor and a warp lord, vermin lord. And both of those didn't die in the entire game. And I swung at them four times each. And they were left on a couple of wounds. And that ultimately led to my demise. And I wish I'd had the powerful combo. I really, with... when you're putting a lot of resources into your, you know, these big monsters, they're 340 points. You want to know that when they go somewhere, they're going to kill shit, because you can get them there. They're swift. But if they get there and they're not killing the top end stuff, then that's a lot of it's a lot of risk reward. So I prefer pretenders as opposed to any other of the sub factions, because you have got more raw damage available. So that's why we've gone with pretenders, because of this particular combo. So we've then got, and he or she have got Born of Damnation, which is it's a D3 heal. It's a D3 heal spell. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it is, 6 or 7 or some such. Then there's another Keeper of Secrets, again with the Sinestrous Hand. He's got the Pendant of Slaanesh. This is... and hopefully this is the item that does that. If it's the wrong item, it's the one that gives you D3 wounds back in your hero phase. Again, we're trying to keep these chaps alive. And then the reason I've got this item that keeps them alive on, it's got my favorite spell in the game, Slothful Stupor, which is the one where you pick a hero within 12, an enemy hero within 12, I think 12 or 18, one of the two, and they can't use a command point, they can't run, they can't charge. So in the mirror, this is fucking great. If you can get this off against an enemy kipper, you're stopping that locust because I can't get within an inch of you. You're stopping that double swing. You're stopping. You don't need to hit them, so you're stopping them getting depravity. You know, it's just a good. It's such a good spell. I can't emphasize it enough. I really like that spell. Mm-hmm. It's a great spell. It's my fate. I just love that. I love it, and it gets in your opponent's head as well. It's really frustrating. If sometimes you'll get it off against Nagash. Sometimes that cheeky fucker with his +3 to unbind rolls a double one, and then Nagash ain't doing much, which I bloody love. Or Archaon, he can fail his 5+ ignore. You know, sometimes it can come in absolutely, absolutely clutch. Then we've got another Keeper of Secrets with the Scepter of Domination. So we want as many command points really as poss. And this is the one where, I think this is the one, I don't have the tome in front of me, but hopefully this is the one where if you're in your hero phase, if you're within 12 inches of an enemy hero and they've got a command point on a 4+, you nick it and you get rid of theirs. And command points are value. Command points are awesome. Command points keep whole units alive. Command points let you double swing. So stealing one from your opponent and gaining one yourself, that isn't a 50-point swing. That's a 100-point swing worth of value. And seeing as the command points in the game are getting sort of better and better, it's just super solid being able
it's
to
also very, very valuable in this particular army and this particular build.
Yes, well, that's why we need command points, because we want to be double swinging as often as possible. And then we've got another spell. Which one is it? The other spell, which is... Oh, I've not written it on here. Oh, Progeny of Damnation. Is that the... I forget.
We've done that. We've been through that one anyway. We've been through that one. The only one we haven't talked about now is Shalaxy.
Right, okay. And I've got... So you... I don't particularly like Shalaxy, which is, I think, is a fair comment. There are... But I like her in this list. So she has got... So we've got Shalaxy in there. She's got Hysterical Frenzy. Hysterical Frenzy is a great spell. That's the one where you cast it on a big horde every six. You roll the dice for everyone in that unit. Every six becomes a D3. And of these four Keepers of Secrets, Shalaxy's probably the one that your opponent's not going to be the most worried about initially, I feel, because she's obviously taken a lot of flack. She's interesting, I think, Shalaxy. Is she a she? They?
They.
Okay. So they are very interesting because they actually do. It's not they, though, is it? Because it's not two of them.
They're a demon, so they're non-gendered.
They're not, yeah, of course. I don't want to say it. Her. I'm going to probably say her, but that's because my brain's going
to... That's fine. Don't worry. It's all good. It's a mythical creature anyway, so like it's not that vital.
But it's important, but I'm going to do it accidentally. I'm going to keep saying sorry. So she against a hero, interestingly enough, without support, her versus another Keeper of Secrets, she does more damage at every bracket. If you do that, I've got a lovely damage calculator, so you can work it out. If you don't believe me, I can send you the
100% believe you.
So she will do more. She's pound for pound more efficient at killing characters than the other Keepers of Secrets unsupported, and that where going back to that earlier point I made about, you know, I ran in and I didn't kill these monsters, and I wish I had. It's another hammer. It's another more reliable way of dealing with a character. And you say earlier there are these rules that aren't so fun. She's got a great fucking get over here ability. I think it's really nice. You know, she can force characters to try and charge her, or they take D3 mortal wounds. That's her 12-inch in the charge phase. They've got to issue a charge, and if they don't, they take D3 mortal wounds. Right. I mean, that's a great little ability. It's super useful for gaining depravity. And it's just chip damage. Anything that does chip damage, I value. So actually I like Shalaxy in this list, because if you see the rest of the list, there are two battalions. There's the Cyberite one that gives you extra command points if you roll under four, in this case, four or under, I think. And there's the Depraved Drove. So getting her into a position where she can get and go sort out a character in this list, I think, is good. So we've got three Keepers of Secrets, four Keepers of Secrets that are all hopefully going to be swinging twice. So there's some real damage potential in this list. There's three ways to heal. There's two spells, and there's one Keeper that keeps healing itself. And there's a way to piss off your opponent and really fuck up their plans by stopping an opponent. So you can steal command points with that item, and you can prevent a character using a command point with that spell. These are in a world where people can just auto unbind, and in a world of Croak where he gets four table wide fucking spells. What I like here is, yes, that's super powerful, but we've got 8-9 spells that this list can, they're going to run out of unbind attempts. So you're going to get something hopefully useful through. And then if we go, we round off the list with a great Bray Shaman, three units of 10 Ungor, the Depraved Drove, and an Umbral Spell Portal. And that great Bray Shaman spell is still one of the most fun, most useful tools in the game. It's fucking fantastic. 18 inches, move a unit 2d6 inches towards the nearest fucking thing. In a world full of Holy Within and these buffs being super relevant, this is really, really, really good. And especially... So people are going to be worried about the portal, what spells you can put through the spell portal. So you can put Hysteria through there if you want. If they unbind that, great. We can now try Soulful Stupor. If they unbind that, great. We can now try fucking moving a unit towards you. So just imagine those, that blob of 40 skinks that are in that, within that range, so they can run away and shoot. You can take them out of that range because it's difficult to keep 40 within that range. And all of a sudden you've dealt with a unit of 40 skinks. Yes, I appreciate it's unlikely because fucking toads have got +2 to unbind or +3 to unbind. But if that's, that is an opportunity that you have that other lists don't have available to them. Some True. People have got no choice but to run at those guys and then, you know, quit after two turns. Whereas you have got a sliver of hope. Give me a sliver of hope and I will win fucking tournaments with it. Absolutely. It does happen. I know it happens because I've won tournaments when I've been up against it because I've had these outs. Play to your outs. So that I really like. And I'd like to make a point about the depraved drove here. I've seen, I watched the Just Play, and they did a fantastic job of their Slaanesh tome. It was, I really enjoyed it. And they had some lists. And there was a point Ian made about how he doesn't like the depraved drove, how he would just take three units of Chaos Warriors instead. Mm. And that is absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with that attitude. I would just like to offer an alternative to that and why I rate the depraved drove above that. So it's an alternative view. It's not correct. It's not better than Ian's view. It's just different. But I'd like to explain why. And then I'd like to touch on how interesting it is and how it's a really great way of describing and seeing how different people view the game and how different people value different things. Yes. So with the depraved drove, firstly, it's 430 points. So it is what, 20% of your army. And it is essentially just three units of 10 Ungor and that great shaman. And Ian's point was he doesn't feel that that's a lot of points and investment to not have a real impact on the game because they don't do many, you know, they don't have great many attacks. They don't have a great save. They're going to die quickly. Whereas three units of Chaos Warriors, or perhaps even more because that's only 270 points, they've got a better save. They've got more wounds. They can kill more. They don't die as quick, et cetera, et cetera. But there is other value in that depraved tome that's got nothing to do with what's going on in the board. Well, it has got something to do with what's going on the board. But first of all, those 30 Ungor, they can stretch out much further and they can protect your backfield from any sneaky teleports. It's 10 models on an objective rather than 5. It's a unit that's more likely to get wounded and obviously get some depravity. It is it's a shaman. It's an artifact. It's a command point in this army that's got, well, in this list that's got 4 keepers of secrets. We want all those command points because when we get in combat, we've got to make it count. You've got to fucking fuck shit up when you get there. And if you run out of if you don't have a command point, then so that 430 points is actually 50 points less because of a command point, and it allows you to have that other item, which could be D3 wounds, you know, back, or it could be that command point that you're stealing. Also super important, I think, and why I think it's better for a novice, is it's 2 drops. Slaanesh armies are going to be really popular because the models are beautiful. The models are absolutely stunning, aren't they? Loads of people are going to be getting Slaanesh armies. But at tournaments, I don't see them being top tier. There'll be a couple of absolute fucking legends that are really good at the game that do well with Slaanesh and go 4-1 or might even win with it just because they're really, really good. But I think most people, it's an army that requires a really high skill level to do well with. So I think most people that are going to have a Slaanesh army are going to end up, you know, mid to bottom. I think that's fair to say. So there'll be a lot of mirror matches. I think there'll be a lot of Slaanesh versus Slaanesh. And having a 2-drop list as opposed to some of these, the most popular lists I've seen that have got sort of 4 drops in them, you know, the Cyberites and 3 battle line, basically. Having that choice of going first or second, being able to make sure you go second, denying them the double turn and giving you the opportunity for the double turn, that's huge. That is fucking big, right? And also, it's much easier if you've got that choice. People will often... We often like tear chunks out of each other, don't we? So we'll say you're a net lister or you rely on low drops and all of this. But it's okay. It's okay to do those various things. And I think a novice, it's much easier to have a low drop army than it is to have a high drop army. High drop armies require a lot of skill and a lot of knowledge about deployment, whereas low drop armies, I think, are easier to manage and they're easier to learn with. So I think it's useful for a novice to use an army like this as opposed to an army that just had three units of Chaos Warriors, etc. Because having that choice is less stressful than not having that choice. And if you go for, if you opt for the other way and having loads of drops, then you've got to know what you're doing. And people often don't know what they're doing.
So, agreed.
So, sorry, I did go, I'm laboring this point a bit much, aren't I? But okay. My point is, another point is how interesting it is that some people value and see, you know, raw power and data and raw stats as what's important. And other people may see things, you know, that's going on off the table about keeping you relaxed and making your decision process much easier. Because I'm all about that. I'm all about what's going up in here. I'm 90% in my head, 10% what's going on in the table. And I think that's super important. Keeping yourself nice and relaxed, having control, making the decisions. That to me is really super valuable, and it's something that it should be considered. But neither, I'm not saying that I'm right. One thing I really struggle with is when people offer an opinion, and I'm not saying this is what Just Play had done, but this is Age of Sigmar content everywhere. When people offer an opinion, but they offer it as fact, mm-hmm. and what works for you is not works for, it's not what's going to work for other people, because we're wired differently. Some people don't react emotionally at a table. Some people do. So, and if you don't appreciate that, you don't understand that, and you don't acknowledge that, then you can't do anything about it. So I think it just harkens back. This list for me works much better for me than it would for presumably, the Just Play boys. But that's okay, because I think fundamentally we're wired differently. So that's just the point I wanted to make there about, I just wanted to offer an alternate view for people, because they might have listened to that and discounted it. They may agree with me, they may not, but I think it's worth exploring, I would say.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry, so that's the list as is.
Okay.
The Kippers, the Four Keepers, like I say, Shalaxi's in there because I really want some hammer units. We've gone for Pretenders as opposed to Godseekers, because when we get there, there's no point getting there and failing. So get there and fuck shit up. And that's what I think Pretenders does. What are your thoughts? I did a lot of speaking then.
It's okay. Let's talk positives. Let's talk positives, and that's an important point, is you've put in a lot of really fun mechanics in there ultimately. Like, when you look at the whole Sinesh book as a whole, obviously you want to use all of the things, and you've put everything in that list. That's why it's weird having Blitzbarb archers, right? Be they on foot or be they on mount, because they don't interact with almost any of the core mechanics that the book has. Doesn't interact with euphoric killers, doesn't interact with locust, doesn't only interacts with depravity. And I see depravity in this book. I know a lot of people making a big deal out of depravity, but I really see it as like a consequential thing of being there, very much like playing Tzeentch, very much like playing Nurgle. Like, you rack them up, but they're there because they're there. Actually, of all the things that I enjoy the most, probably Khorne's Blood Tithe is the most important, because it gives so much. Because it gives so much to the player rather than just some points. So number one, huge positives. And then you've included a bunch of spells which are useful, like you've talked about there. Slothful Stupor, obviously, is super cool. Progeny of Damnation and all that is really nice to have in the list. So I think that like all of those key elements, and I also think that it's a really smart play taking beasts, and I'll say this time and again, gives you access to a different spell lore, gives you cheap battle line, which the unit needs, the book needs massively. It needs screens and it needs cheap ones, because you've got characters that are made of paper. And that's where we get to, unfortunately, the negatives that I really see in here. I know that you're going to say Shalaxi is better than the Keepers, but I think the Keepers suck. So really, when I said Shalaxi suck to you earlier, I also think the Keepers suck. Like, they're more expensive than Bloodthirsters, and maybe a tiny bit better than Bloodthirsters, but, like, in my opinion, like, I don't see them really surviving. Like, you don't have anything for any pregame move screen. So, yeah, you can go first, but you can't alpha with no flies. Which
well, you
is...
want to go second if you're a combat army.
Yeah, we, of course. But you, then you're going to get fucking smashed. Like, all your threats are in 3-4 characters, which you can get smashed by some pretty decent shooting. Like, and then the whole thing falls apart because then you're not generating CP. You're not fighting twice. Yeah. And also, on the tabletop, like, the 4 keepers run off. I get it. They run off. But then... they can't run off in a central block if you're running them as a 4, and you need them to run as 2/2s. And as soon as 1/2 goes down, and more importantly, the 1/2 that's near Shalaxy, so then Shalaxy can't fight. Like, so then as soon as one of the 2s go down, they become infinitely worse.
Yeah.
Like, so like I've seen a 4 keeper list suggested previously, and I just think, like, again, I think actually one of the things you've produced here is, let's go back to positives, really fun and engaging if you play with it, because you're going to have a glass cannon.
Yeah,
cannon strong. You're going to have a glass hammer, like a fairly dangerous weapon, but not like terrifying. So you have those, like, and you're going to have to play a lot. And you've got some cool outs, like you've said. The spells are a cool out. Yeah. Abilities are cool out. Even Locust in the right situation is a cool out when you're fast enough. But it's how many wounds are we? Like, we're not big on the wounds, are we? What are we on? 91?
Not great.
And you, of course, you can generate depravity. So I think ultimately, this is a good list for enjoying yourself. I think that that's the point of the show. I think, like, yeah, I think that you'll have a fun time trying really, really hard to integrate this into, like, an army. But do I think, like, I think it has loads of weaknesses. And I understand that you didn't try to cover the weaknesses and you pushed into the strengths, which I think is great. But, like, you could pick this army apart, I feel, very, very comfortably. And not, like, by turn 2 or 3. In the first turn, you can really destroy the synergy of this army. Turn two, absolutely the top.
Seraphon, you know, you probably do have to go first, but you try the soulful, you try the shaman trick through the portal. If it doesn't work, then yeah, you're probably fucked. You're probably fucked if it does work, but it's Seraphon. But we can't. There's nothing in this tome that there's no lists. I feel that we can answer the top end.
Well, I'm not talking Seraphon. I'm talking AK, more tribes. Yeah.
More tribes haven't got as much shooting, so there's a bit of.
But if they can just smash the one keeper, like, and then once you smash the one keeper of the two, unless there was a 4, and then you've got a board control problem as well, because you've just got the 4, no screens, nothing to control board space, like, and then they're just like, so they're a 2 or a 2 or a 3, like, do you know what I mean? So, like, where they move, like, I just don't see it ultimately, but, like, I get that people are going to want to try it, and I respect it. Like, again, positives.
I've got it. Positives. I've got it in my cabinet and I'm painting it, so I'm going to try it. It's a 3-2 list. It's a 2-3 list, I think.
Yeah. But what? And also,
it's designed to be in the middle and have some fun. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Right. Yeah. Like, right. I tried to talk about the positives and the negatives, because I think that there is a bit of both, especially with this build. And also, people have a bunch of this already, right? That's important.
Yeah.
They already have 4 keepers sat on a shelf having a great time. Depraved Drove not getting euphoric killers is genuinely upsetting for me. But, like, just to reiterate your point, I think that this Depraved Drove integration into Sinesh, if you were trying to make Sinesh work, I think is like an almost auto. Like, almost auto. Whether it, like, you build into that and then you start smashing them so you can generate depravity early, really, really important. Or you go higher, like, you can add Ungol Raiders into this, so you can give yourself a pre-game screen, which I think would be super, super useful as well. And then that means that you're not getting alphaed off the board, because, like, a Maw Crush is going to, like, absolutely fucking move twice and smash the fuck out of one of these, or maybe 2 of these keepers, like, which is going to be, like,
easy. Well, if you let them, you've got a screen of 30 Ungol to get in the way, haven't you?
You do.
I see your point.
Yeah. but anyway, yeah, like, super fun to play, I'm sure.
I think so. I mean, I'm keen to give it a whirl. And it, like, you know me, I love the means, quad kippers. You know, if you win any games with quad kippers, then fucking great. And another reason to like Shalaxy, I like stories in the game. And that one turn where you fucking fist someone absolutely brilliant. You can then run around the event and tell everyone that you pierced someone's soul, right? And that's a good story. And I like stories in my games. But if it happens in a game as well, you can keep talking to it, your opponent, about it. You know, I shafted you. And that's going to fucking get in their head. And I love getting in people's heads. So it's another reason to include her. If you really didn't like her, you're absolutely right. You could include 3 units of Ungol Raiders and they'd pre-game move 6 inches at the front. That's 240 points. That's still part of the Depraved Drove. So you've still got the 2 drops. So then you could make it, you've got 100 points to do other things as well. You could add a command point and, you know, an endless spell, Geminids, for example. So you don't have to have Shalexi in there. I like her.
Sweet. All right, the next list, Darren's is Fat Nurgle. What do we think of this Nurgle list? Do you want to tell me what's in it?
Yes. So this isn't particularly creative. So I really like Glutos, what's his bollocks? That bubble of -1 to hit, 12 inches, that is significant. But I don't think, again, for me, he doesn't fit in the Slaanesh tome because it's trying to cover a weakness and it's 400 points to try and cover a weakness. So there are lots of other minuses to hit in the Slaanesh tome, but they're all very situational. They're not constant. And I don't like situational things. I do like situational things, but I think again, I feel that's covering a weakness, but I do think he slots in to other tomes because he's 400 points as an ally beautifully. And this one is pretty disgusting. So it's Nurgle. It's the Munificent Wanderers. Is that right? Fuck, hey, I wish I was educated. 3 greater demons of Nurgle. So it's the old Thricefold, right? With Fat Fuck in it, basically. So you've got all the stuff that you would see in a normal Thricefold with the Great Unclean One. I've gone with a Bile Blade and a massive Bile Sword rather than the Flail. Because I want to get some of these excellent spells off and you can nick yourself and you can get +1 to cast. And Nurgle isn't about doing mass damage. This list is about doing reliable, constant little nicks all the way through the game. Little nicks, little mortal wounds. This does a mortal wound. That does a mortal wound. So many little ways of doing damage, right? So you don't need...
So it's like death by 1,000 cuts.
Exactly that. So you don't need that big... hitting greater demon. So I prefer the Bile Blade to get some of these, help try and get some of these spells through rather than anything else. They've got the One Last Gift and the Muck Talon item because you have to take them and you can, that's basically one of +1 attack, is it, for the massive bar sword? I forget. I've not got it in front of me. Then we've got Glorious Afflictions. You've got another Great Unclean One with the Bile Blade and Doomsday Bell so you can make them all fast and the Wither Stave and then Favored Poxes. And then we've got Rotagus with Glorious Afflictions. And then we've got Glutos or Scolion. And then 30 Plague Bearers, 10 Plague Bearers, 10 Plague Bearers, the Thricefold Befoulment and the Geminids, basically. And this does everything that you want in the old Thricefold Battalion. But now that fat bastard is going to give you another -1 to hit. So you've got -1 to hit from the Wither Stave. So if you keep the Wither Stave and those two together, that's a -2 bubble. That's fucking horrible, isn't it? You've then got the Plague Bearers have got all their minuses to hit. So you can add that. You've got Geminids as well. And then one of these spells, I'm not sure which one it is, whether or not it's the Glorious Afflictions or the Favored Poxes. One of those spells is another -1 to hit, -1 to armor save, if that model doesn't move. In fact, I think I've got that on the one with the Doomsday Bell and the Bile Sword, because that's the one with the Wither Stave. That's the one that's least likely to move.
Love the Wither Stave in the current meta, by the way. Talked about this a lot. Like it's integrated. It's integration very much like Archeon. Reroll sixes. Is it just for models within 12 or units within 12?
It's just great, isn't it?
Yeah. Reroll sixes to hit, but like, yeah, just massive fan of that. I think it's really good. Talked about this on the previous show. Like, it's really nice seeing that in there, and obviously that. The triple fatty list and the Thricefold Befoulment. I love that you've gone for the quad fatties. Like you've got a theme today, Darren.
Yeah.
Quad kippers,
yeah.
Quad fatties.
Well, his spell, Old Wasses Bollocks, so it's another, he's got +1 to cast it as well, is a half movement spell. I don't know if it's 12 inches or 18 or something, but you can half a unit's movement. And then the Nurgle, if I got access, I think it's the Glorious Afflictions. Well, it's one of those spells, but that's another half movement spell, but at 21 inch range. So you've got, so you can quarter the move of a unit. So that's, that in itself is really fucking good. Then the Witherstave mitigates damage. You're getting damage mitigation from Geminids, damage mitigation from the Fat Bastard, damage mitigation from the spell. You know, it just all, and then and in then late game, you've got Nurgle. Nurgle doesn't have a great deal of summoning, but it does have significant, you know, it is significant, and it can come in and they can pop up and you can, so it's just a death, you're just going to, it's even more difficult to remove than it used to be if you add him in there. So it's just horrible, I think. And I quite like that. It's not particularly big brain. It's not particularly different. I just think he slots in there beautifully.
I agree with you. Like, previously we've seen, and obviously that might change up a lot, we've seen like a hilarious, I don't think it was Simon Weekly. I can't remember who it was. Over on TTS, he's been running a lot of trip. We've seen Thrice Vorpal Fowler taken a lot with these Plague Bearers. I think I might have been 2 30s and a 10, but the list we've seen a lot is Bellicor in that ally slot with two units of Untamed Beasts. So there's two units of Untamed Beasts running up the board and controlling. So how do you feel like the Glottos versus Bellicor kind of like swap? It makes the army play different. I love what it does to the Plague Bearers. Makes the Plague Bearers pretty unkillable. So what do you think of what do you think about Bellicor or Glottos? Is it just different courses for different races?
It's an alternate. Some people don't like Bellicor, some people do. So it's worth exploring, isn't it? I think. I mean, Bellicor brings so much to the table, doesn't he? He is great, and he's in the next list that we'll talk about. But that's been seen, it's been done. So I'd just like to. I think I have not tried it, but I do think that this could be as good. You know, as good or even better. But there's just so much healing. There's so much. He gets his wounds back, doesn't he, with a command point if he does damage. All the fatties do. All the fatties get their points back. The Nurgle wheel can help them heal. You know, there's just a lot. Again, there's loads of great Nurgle spells in here as well. They're all getting, most of them are getting plus one to cast if you knit yourself. I just think it's good. And like you say, it's another meme list, isn't it? Four fat fucks.
But it's also hilarious. Like, and then stocking all those minuses to hit in a big bubble. Henry Steele over in the chat says, would this work pretty nice with Blobs of Chaos Warriors too? It wouldn't work as well. The main strength, obviously, in this situation is that the Plague Bearers are naturally, because of their war score, they're naturally minus to hit anyway. So when you add other minuses to hit, which you're bringing, when you're allying in Glottos, so then you're adding an additional minus one, and then you add Geminids, you're making it ridiculous. Like, it's dumb amounts of minuses to hit. So what's that, minus three, four? Is it minus four to hit?
Minus, well, you've got...
minus two from shooting, and then, minus three.
Yeah, minus... Well, up close, you've got reroll sixes to hit, haven't you? And you've got the minus one from Geminids, minus one from combat. Yeah, so minus three. Fuck. Absolutely insane. Minus four from shooting up close if you can actually get to them. But Nurgle don't have a problem getting across the board. They're nice and swift, aren't they?
So fast.
Yeah, so I think this is potentially a good if this army gets up close to you, then you're not having a good day, are you, basically?
Yeah, there's a couple of things here to talk about, obviously. Unfortunately, the minuses to hit aren't going to negate one of the, I think, positive melee threats that exist out there at the moment in Wardens. Those fives to hit cause a mortal wound, like they're not affected, unfortunately, by any minuses to hit. So I think that's a threat, but they're few and far between at the moment. And I do think that there's like a big skill cap on those. So like, if you were to go like end game tournament, how many Lumineth armies do I expect to see? Not as many as some of the more face rolly armies like Ideth and Seraphon. And also, unfortunately, like this list, I feel has like a timestamp on it. Although I think it's great in that the minuses to hit probably will see Age of Sigmar 3 very much like we've seen in 40k. We'll have a hard cap on plus one minus one on any modifiers.
Oh, that's so, a good point.
Now that might not be true. That might not be true, but probably. I think.
Do you think swords are going to get smaller as well? Because that's another thing I think that's in Slaanesh's favour. If at the moment, they might not be great, but with Age of Sigmar 3, they might be much improved if the boards are smaller.
The boards are all but confirmed to be smaller for Age of Sigmar 3.
Okay, so that's I'll be interesting to see how that affects their performance. That'll be cool. But no, that's a great this probably hasn't got a great shelf life, but fuck it.
Oh no, it's not to criticize. Like, I actually think that this is super sweet, and also I'd like to maybe see someone model up a even bigger Glottos. I get the model's cool, but yeah. Even bigger, you know, like
challenge. Put what's his bollocks, the big one, what's he called, Glotkin. Put the Glotkin on a big fucking chariot somewhere. That would be fucking great. Put the Glotkin on a chaos fucking mammoth. That's what I want.
Paint in pink. That works for me. I like this, though. I think this is fun. Actually, weirdly, I think I prefer my play style. I think I prefer the keeper list to this list because the keeper list is more active. This is This is more reactive. Well, those three fatties are hilarious when they're going around with that Balewind from Thrushfold. It's just nuts.
They do
not
work.
Balewind.
They do work called. As well. Terry proved that, didn't he? Old what's his bollocks? Yeah. Terry the painter, face hammer dude. He really proved that they do some work. You know,
Terry's also been playing that list for about four straight years. So
yeah, but I've seen him table Daughters of Cain armies. You know, when they were, hard good. As fuck.
Yeah, great.
So hopefully this will be... Well, hopefully someone will get some enjoyment out of this.
oh, I didn't even show that list on the screen. Sorry, lads. Next up is Darren's List Diary. This is Fatty Loka.
So I like in them, I think here we can attack potentially three times, which I like. Let me get this list up. So it's Legions of Chaos Ascendant. And the Legion of Chaos Ascendant lists that are knocking about, the successful ones, are all pretty similar, aren't they? And this has certainly got certain elements of it. So we've got Bellicor, of course we have. We've got Kairos, of course we have. But we've gone for, rather than the Nurgle rat thing. God, I haven't done this for so long. What's
it's okay.
Vermin Lord.
Vermin Lord Corruptor.
There we go. So it hasn't got the Corruptor. We haven't got blobs of Plague Bearers. We haven't got any shooters or the Chaos Dwarf things that you love or you used, what they're called. The flamey dudes with the 3-inch reach. We haven't got any of that nonsense. We've gone for a Keeper of Secrets with the Ruinous Aura and then 30 Demonettes, 10 Demonettes, 10 Demonettes. To be honest, the two yachts of 10 Demonettes could be Plague Bearers. And then a unit of six fiends, Geminids, and an extra command point. And there's just a couple of nice combos here. It's not anything to write home about, but I like the fact you can get Echo of Hatred, which is the spell that makes you attack on death. Mm-hmm. So you could cast that on a unit of Demonettes. They could then have the Keeper of Secrets, because they've got the Hedonite keyword, haven't they? They can use that command ability outside of Slaanesh, can't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're going to be able to go in. They're going to be able to swing. They're going to be able to swing again. And then if they're killed, they're going to be able to swing a third time, which I quite like. And it's models, not units. So the spell is you can't attack again if you've already attacked in the... You can only attack... You can attack again if you've attacked once. You can't do it twice, can you? There's no way to do that. Yeah. But it's not interrupted, because if they attack because they've died, that's a model rather than a unit. That's how I understand it. Hopefully that made some sense, right? So we can potentially attack three times, because you could run in, kill a screen, go in again to something big, attack. They could then kill you. Then you'd die and you could attack again. I just like triple attacking shit. I think that's cool and interesting. And I think there are some cool,
as well, right?
There are some cool plays you can do, right? There are some, and it's a difficult situation for your opponent to have in their head, because it's so alien, because it's so new. You can explain something to someone, but them seeing it is a completely different thing to them having it explained to them. And then the fiends, I really like fiends. They're quite expensive, but they've got an ability where if there's more than four of them, they're minus one to hit, and they're minus one to hit anyway, aren't they, in combat? If wizards within 12 inches, they're minus one to cast. And I think any unbinding abilities where magic is so fucking big at the moment and there are so many pluses to casts, I wish they'd get rid of that as well. We don't need any more pluses to casts and we don't need any more automatic unbinds. Fucking just closes the game right down. So that helps out there massively. But they've got minus one to hit in combat. And if there's over four of them, they're minus one to wound. And then old Bellacor has got a spell on his war scroll, which is pick a unit, they're minus one to wound. So you're going to be able to, and obviously Kairos is going to be able to cast Bellacor's spell if he's within 18 inches, because he knows the war scroll spells of all the chaps that are around him, right? So that's a more consistent way of getting this spell off. So we're hopefully going to be able to put Geminids through someone. Then that unit of Demonettes are going to be minus two to hit, minus two to wound, potentially attacking twice, potentially attacking on death. That's, I think that's pretty fucking cool. And then you've got all the normal locust stuff. You know, you're going to be able to bring on, bringing on 10 Demonettes and then being able to charge. I think they can, I think, Owen makes a good point in the chat as well. The Echo of Hatreds lasts the entire battle round, you know, so in their turn, you're going to be able to fight on death as well. So, but you did make me lose my train of thought. I love you, Owen. Show me your socks. So there's just a couple of nice little combos in there. And I think it's an alternative way of running Legions of Chaos Ascendant that isn't just the normal. It's got elements of the normal way to do it. But I think that's just a little bit more fun. Oh, that's right. If you use the Chaos Legion Ascendant ability to summon, you can summon either, I think you can summon five Furies from Bellacor. I might be wrong about that. Five Pink Horrors from Kairos, or you can get 10 Demonettes, and they're going to be able to charge. Demonettes, do they still have reroll charges with a banner?
They have a run and charge, and they do they have reroll charges? Actually, because their War Scroll wasn't updated on the website, and I've been waiting for the actual, because obviously I haven't had access to the book.
I don't know, but I think if it does, then that's pretty good. If it doesn't, then it's not that good. People can ignore it and tell me I'm wrong later. But that's just an alternative way to play Legions of Chaos Ascendant, and that's something that I think is pretty that I'd be quite happy to play around with. I think that's quite fun.
Super fun. I like having the Fiends in there. The Fiends are a fun little new unit for procking some sixes to do some real fun stuff. Mm-hmm. I think is quite exciting. Thanks, 40k Will. Loads of love. I like all the spells. I think Loka's obviously super, super good. And then, of course, that Ruinous Aura for the 5-up DPR on that Keeper of Secrets, I think is actually a bonus. Mm-hmm. And is a big positive. The Demonette's obviously a paper, but, you know, like, you could also make the Fiends pile in and attack twice, and then they get killed three times, and that's pretty cool as well. So super fun. And you get some summoning out of this as well. Which is quite nice. So you can, you know, you've got access to two different, you've got Pink Horrors, but it's fives now instead of 10. But it's still nice that you can put five Pink Horrors on back objectives. It means also that this army play is very much how I don't think Sinesh Army does play, where you can push everything forward and you've got stuff to summon at the back or to hold back objectives. I know you can summon from the Fane, but like, it's a combat army, so, and you can't summon shooters, which is weird. I think this is fun, super fun. And having that stuff put into Loka is cool as well, right?
I think so. I mean, making that point you made about Sinesh summoning as well, that it's just a turn too late to be useful. It's always really useful when you can put minimum resources on your own backfield so you can maximize the amount of resource you're throwing at your enemy. And Sinesh can't really do that.
And it's also what your like back end resource is. There's also some like phenomenal units at the moment that are making like some, like, you know, like a couple of years ago, like Tree Revenants would like steal a couple of like wins, and obviously Heart Renders or a Canary basically for Daughters of Cain, they'd always grab that, like, they'd be like, I won, Heart Renders came down, they left the objective and I smashed it. Like Shadow Stonkers for Daughters of Cain are just wild. Summon, like, even just 10 skinks that you throw in into that back objective because that global teleport. Not talking about Seraphon generally, but like, you know, like any of those kind of like, and there's quite a few armies that do have those, and have those like units, even as allies. Like, so that backfield role is, I would say, sometimes even more important in some cases at the moment. Like, it's gone up, but probably not anymore. Do you know what? It probably hasn't gone up. It's probably just as relevant, but, like, the units that are doing it are different.
People are getting better at using those units as well.
Yeah, because they're super fragile, right? Like, they're super fragile. Yeah.
But that knowledge that these units do this shit is out there now, you know, and it's people have seen the results, so people are, and rightly so, are emulating what they're seeing, right? Because it's successful.
Yeah, and if you guys want to go back and watch the Orcman game, where we saw Orcman play, I can't remember which game it was. Go back and watch that. You'll see some you'll see MSU teleporting and how relevant it was for capturing and scoring objectives. I think that's always really, really important. So this is a conversation about the counter to that and how Loka gives you the ability to do something around those, which I think is really positive.
You could easily remove the demonettes and have plague bearers if you wanted, but I just wanted to keep the theme. I think over on balance, that would probably make it stronger. But I'd like that. That's something that I would try happily, you know, against the Bruces. I'd happily take that to an event. I don't think it's good enough to be a team list, but it's super interesting. And then this next one's potentially horrible. This is have you got the next one?
I've got it. It's up. Idolaters.
So we've got Slaves to Darkness, Idolaters. I mean, this is my first stab at creating one of these. I'm not too familiar with the rules for them, so how they've changed. So I might make some mistakes here, but let's see how we get on. So we've got a Lord on Chariot. Yes, I love Chaos Chariots. So I'm pleased about that. Fiery Orator. I believe this allows him to do his prayer, because they get a prayer. They become priests when they're on the Chaos Chariots. And then the prayer that's relevant here is you get plus one to cast it plus one for it to go off. So on a 2+ in the hero phase, he can make a unit that is, I don't know, within or wholly within some bollocks, reroll wounds. So I mean, reroll wounds is a really super strong buff. It is a fantastic buff. They can't have any items, because I imagine people ran out of ideas when they were writing the rules for Idolaters. So you can get a realm item. You can still have realm items, can't you?
You can choose to be from a realm.
Yeah, okay. So I've got, for me, this chap, he's not about damage dealing. He's about keeping alive. So I've gone for the Realm of Shaman, Fate of Perfect Protection.
Perfect Protection. Yeah, very, very popular.
Yeah, it's great. It's damage mitigation is a thing, and that's probably one of that and the Rage Blade are probably the two best realm items, aren't they? Or the other one that allows you to reroll all ones to hit if you've got loads of attack profiles. Anyway, that's a different conversation. So he's got the Blessings of Nurgle, which is the, you know, those prayers I mentioned. We've gone for two Chaos Sorcerers, because I could have had a Chaos Lord in here, and that allows you to swing twice, but I've watched a few games and I've had a lot of feedback from people. I've used it myself. It's super difficult to actually engineer. It's not something that I would want to be actively trying to do, because I think it would frustrate me if I couldn't get the value out of the Chaos Lord that I wanted. Whereas Chaos Sorcerer Lords, you're always going to get value. In every game, they're going to be useful. They've got that, you know, make a unit reroll armor saves, etc. And they've got the spell that allows you to reroll all hits and wounds. Fucking great spell. And then the two lore spells from Slaves to Darkness are fantastic, which is the Whispers of Chaos, which obviously you can make an entire unit not move. That is super strong. And then the Mask of Darkness, which allows you to teleport a unit. And if you've got this list has got 40 Chaos Marauders in it, right? So you can teleport it and then they can use their bloody charging tricks to make sure that they get in. And we've then got Fat Fuck for 400 points. This list is a plague touch list. We've got 32 Iron Golems, 40 Chaos Marauders, 2 units of Untamed Beasts, a Chaos War Shrine, Nurgle, Plague Touch Warband. We've got Geminids, we've got an extra command point, and we've got Lauchan, the Soul Seeker. Iron Golems, there was a lot of comments when it became apparent that they were going to become battle line. They've got the Chaos Marauder move now, where they can roll 2d6 when they charge and always have a 6, which is fucking great.
Really good.
they get the Nurgle keyword when the Lord's got the same thing. So they can fit in here now. And Iron Golems, if you don't know, if they don't move, they can reroll their armor saves. And they've got a 4-up save, which is for 70 points. Fuck me, that is value town. We like it. But what we can do here with those is the Chaos War Shrine on a 2+ as opposed to a 3 normally can give those guys +1 armor save. So they can have a 3-up armor save. And then you can... The trouble with that is if you want them to reroll armor saves, you've either got the 2 Chaos Sorcerers you can keep near them, or if you're not able to do that, you can keep them still and then you can Louch and Soul Seeker them. And Fat Fuck's good here because not only does he give a -1 to hit bubble, which is obviously really great, but in Idolaters, there's no, or I can't think of any ways to buff your casting unless you included, you know, the blue Scribes or Kairos, for example.
But prayers are like kind of like spells, right?
Well, yeah, well, no, they're not nothing like spells. You can't stop them. They're fucking great. But my point is we want to get Louching off, and this is a way him in there gives you +1 to get it off, and it gives you a nice bubble of -1 to hit. So that unit of Iron Golems could be in your face with a 3-up rerollable save, -1 to hit, -2 to hit if you've got Geminids off. Again, Fat Fuck could be the one that's casting Geminids.
Yep. Because you've got a natural +1 to cast, right?
Exactly. And we've got 2 ways to teleport now. So if you miss Louchen, you can then try the Mask of Darkness. So we've got 2 ways to teleport a unit. We've got 2 Untamed Beasts. Plague Touched is great. That's the one where you run into an enemy and they kill themselves by hitting you and rolling 6s to wound. So it's only 2 drops this. So you're going to use the Untamed Beast's movement to run up the board first and then move again and then charge into something. And hopefully that something's going to have loads of fucking attacks and it's going to kill himself. Lovely. So I like those 2 little suicide units. This is just a nice, I think he slots in there very well as well.
I think ultimately him being 400 points, very much like Glotkin, it's kind of interesting, you know, like you create the how good Glotos is, because Glotos got loads of value, like pluses to cast, that command ability, which he can obviously use on himself.
Where is he?
He's like, he can be very, very tanky and very survivable. That natural +1 to cast and unbind, like he's got some real strengths to him on his own war scroll. Like, whereas Glotkin is like a better force multiplier than you would see from Glotos, but maybe isn't as useful on its own. Like it's a great force multiplier if you can get the spells off, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting what you put in those 400 points for allies, especially in Chaos, because there's some great options. And it's nice that Glotos, at least from the release of the book, has become a new ally in the book, like, or has changed up the shape of some of these other armies. And I think you've done a great job there, Darren, of showing us what can be done, right?
Yeah, well, that, like I say, other people have discussed the good Slaanesh tournament. I think I don't want to say obvious because that's discourteous, but the best way to probably run it, right? Other people have already discussed that, and we don't want to discuss that. We want to discuss the fun and the options and the possibilities and the dreams. So that's what I've tried to do today with these lists, because that's what interests me.
Yeah, yeah, good. Well, and I think you've done a great job of that, right? Do you not think? You're not happy with that?
Ah, you tell me. Owen in the chat, he's also, that's one point I missed out. Thank you, Owen. After they've teleported, the Iron Golems can still make that charge and still have their rerollable saves. So that is again, you can get them to a point where they're really tanky as hell and they're still going to be able to make a consistent charge. Fucking fantastic. Absolutely great.
Yeah, they're really grim. I'd just like to point out, and in Plague Touch Warband, they're disgusting. I charged 6 Stalkers from OBR into them. I just died. Like, I killed them, but I really? Then also, yeah, I just died. Like, Plague Touch Warband is like so strong. And that Iron Golems build is good. And also, like, the Iron Golems build in Idolaters in Plague Touch Warband, because you can max it. You can go crazy. Obviously, you've put Fatty in there, but you could just, I mean, you put Fatty in for the -1 to hit and the Geminids and everything. You just fuck it off and you just go for another 30 or another 2:30s for the same points. Like, no, I'm not.
No, you're right. That's just fucking mean, isn't it?
Yeah. What I'm saying is like you could, like, there's some more variety there, but you can really make it fucking teethy and mean. Like, yeah. And then you're like, all right, this is shit. Like, and they don't get any buffs off, thankfully, like for output. But the output is if you kill yourself, which is pretty horrific, and like would be a great match into Daughters. I'd love to see that match. I think that would be really interesting. Although maybe Marathi just tank like 2 units of 30 on her own, and then the rest of the army just go smash. But like super fun. Like the game diversity is much wider than it ever has been before. Unfortunately, some of that's been gutted out by some of like the real major threats top end. So you like the diversity is harder to really achieve, but there are some like really fun mechanics still inside Age of Sigmar where they like play up against each other, and some of these new books have at least produced some like fun interactions, which I think is what I like most about the SNESH book, is that Fatacross introduction, or maybe even Beast of Chaos, like, because the meme about Beast of Chaos is like, you know, someone's like, what's the chaff in Beast of Chaos, and they're like, it's all chaff. Yeah, so so allying in Beast of Chaos just to be chaff in the SNESH book is also super fun as well, because that's how their book plays and it's what they are. But I'm a big fan. And Darren, thanks for going through this stuff with us. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did very much. I'm sorry we didn't manage 200 viewers. That's what you're going for, isn't it? We didn't manage.
How many are we at?
I don't know, 4.
That's all we need. Hope you four are having the best time. Yeah.
Thanks for having me on. I know I went off on a bit of rant on some things, but I haven't spoken for a long time. So thank you for letting me do that.
It's more than okay. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. Don't forget, you can obviously get in touch with Darren if you've got any thoughts about these lists. The lists are on the website and will be included in the show notes. And I'll be back tomorrow. Is as simple as that. You got any shout outs before we head out, Darren?
Yes, all the people that are helping me with that. I'm not normally prepared for shout outs, am I? I made a mental note to do this. All the people that are helping me with the Nomad Battle Tome. So I just list a few of them. Theo, bless him, is the one that's responsible for that wonderful damage calculator that I've been using, and it's fucking great. Really, really handy. Tristan, who's in the chat, thank you ever so much. He's created a list builder for it. So we can go in and we can create lists, and we can keep a track of the points that we're going to be changing as we playtest. Owen is also in the chat, bless him. He's going to be doing the graphics work, and he's taken over the art design, which is a huge challenge, absolutely, but he's already done some work on it and it's looking beautiful. There's Tyromancer Dan, I'm sure it's Tyromancer from Twitter. He is creating, he's fucking taken it upon himself to create models for every unit that I've created, and they're going to be 3D printable. So you're going to be able to, you know, you're going to be able to play with everything that's in the tome, which I'm really, really fucking lovely with. Old Anthony, is he Crazy Horses? You know who I'm on about there. He is helping 3D print stuff as well. That's fucking wonderful of him. Oh, who else am I missing out here? The chap that wrote the Urn Host, Dan, he wrote the Urn Host mod book. Do you remember that little free book that was at, what's it called? Road to Raw. He's a narrative chap. He's writing some short stories for it. He's already written one that I've read, and it's fucking wonderful. You know, all these people are offering their time for free. It really is a community effort. And, you know, if I've left people out, sorry, I'm drawing a blank here. Scrivo, for example, Scrivo's helping us out with some art. You know, it's just a wonderful, thank you very much. You're all fucking legends. You're really, really super kind. I couldn't be more happy with how the community's come together to try and help me fucking make a tome about halflings. So thank you. God, I love waffle, don't I? I'm having a good old waffle today.
Oh, they're a great community. Don't you worry about it. Big shout out to the Twitch chat, love you tons. Darren, thanks for coming on the show, appreciate you. Everyone look after yourselves, stay healthy, drink loads of water, and take care of yourselves. Thanks to 40k Will for donating $5 from the US. Really, really appreciate that, and I hope you're well. Look after yourselves, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.